this is Mark Bauerlein with another conversation here at First Things. Today in our office, we have Mark Movsesyan, who is well known to First Things readers and listeners. We had Mark last summer on July 31st to give us our Supreme Court roundup and concluding the term and what we should take from that. He is law professor at St. John's University, where he also directs the Center for Law and Religion. Today he's here to discuss oral arguments from last week, specifically the argument on Masterpiece Cake Shop, the Colorado baker. Mark, welcome once more.
Glad to be here, Mark.
Okay, so I think really we're just out for information and discussion about what happened, the background of the case. Do you want to just go ahead?
Sure. Well, so last week was oral argument in Masterpiece Cake Shop, which is the case from Colorado involving a baker, Jack Phillips, and his bakery, Masterpiece Cake Shop, which declined to design and bake a wedding cake for a same-sex couple. When he declined, the couple went to the Colorado Civil Rights Commission and complained, and the Colorado Civil Rights Commission investigated and sanctioned Jack Phillips for violation of Colorado's public accommodations law, which prohibits discrimination in public accommodations, that is, businesses open to the public, on several different grounds, including sexual orientation.
One thing that I've read in a couple of places that hasn't actually been presented in most of the media, he didn't refuse to sell them a cake, correct?
Correct.
He said, if you want a cake, I will sell you a cake. But there was this added component of designing something specially,
yes,
for this event. And obviously he has served gay couples,
yeah,
gay individuals many, many times before. It was specifically this stipulation. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So he says, his lawyer said, he maintains that he has served gay customers and he will be happy to serve gay customers. He just did not want to design and bake a cake for a gay wedding. And he told them this, and that's what occasioned the lawsuit. So he sued in Colorado state courts, and his claim was that applying the public accommodation law to him, that is requiring him to design and bake this cake, would violate both his free speech rights, because it would require him to say something he didn't believe, namely a message in favor of same-sex marriage, and also it would violate his free exercise rights, because it would require him to engage in conduct that he says would violate his convictions as a Christian.
And Mark, these are just obviously very logical and commonsensical statements on his part. And so he prevailed with the Colorado people and the whole thing was dropped.
Right. No, in fact, he lost. Oh. And he lost in the Colorado Commission, and then he sued in the Colorado state courts. He lost there. And then he appealed to the US Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court granted cert. And last week, in a much watched case, they actually heard oral argument. And the argument took some surprising turns, because before the case, everyone expected that the case was going to, excuse me, before the argument, everyone expected that the case was going to turn on free speech concerns. That is, the idea that the state was compelling speech by Jack Phillips. And everyone thought that's what the case is going to be about. At oral argument, surprisingly, the justices, led by the swing justice, Anthony Kennedy, who everyone thinks is going to be the deciding vote, actually focused quite a bit on the free exercise claims, which were thought to be a minor issue. So, it's hard to know what to make of oral argument. It's not necessarily an indication of what's going to happen. But just based on oral argument, it looks like this case may actually turn out to be a major free exercise ruling.
Indeed. I was talking with a libertarian a law professor, David Bernstein at George Mason, a while back, who said, no, these cases are going to be strictly, he saw a lot of these cases coming, they're going to be free speech cases.
Mm-hmm.
The turn is really going to go away from the whole religious issue. And I think the implication there is, what would one say, that the 14th Amendment simply takes anti-discrimination takes priority over the First Amendment on the religious issue.
So that's right. That's what most people thought it was going to be about. And in fact, there was a fair amount of questioning on the speech issue. I don't want to make it seem like they just ignored it. So the speech issue, look, both of these issues are complicated. And as I think I said last time, the doctrine is sufficiently complicated and indeterminate that the court could go either way, really, depending on the intuitions of the justices. And frankly, let's be frank about this, on the intuition of Anthony Kennedy, since he's going to be the one who is going to be the deciding vote, everyone expects.
So this jumps ahead a little bit, but there's no indication that anyone on the liberal side of the court was a little shaky on the specifics of this case, even if they were completely supportive of Obergefell. They have no doubts about the LGBT rights, in broadly speaking. But on this, Kagan, no whisper of skepticism, anything?
I didn't see any of that when I read through the transcript and didn't hear it when I listened in, too. I think
it really is Kennedy.
It's going to be Tony Kennedy, I think, Justice Kennedy. So on the compelled speech issue, the question there is whether the design of a cake is speech that is protected by the First Amendment. Now, there's a little bit of a factual quirk in this case, because they didn't actually discuss what the design was going to be. This is, I think we talked about this in July. When the gay couple came in, they said to him, "We'd like you to design a cake for our wedding," and he said, "No, I can't." But they never actually discussed what the cake was going to look like. So was it going to have words? Was it not going to have words? But the court took the case nonetheless, and I think we have to assume they wanted him to express something celebratory of their wedding. So,
two men on top of the cake.
Something.
Two male names on top of the cake.
Something. Yeah. Has to be something.
Yeah. Because they wouldn't just buy one of the generic cakes that he had on sale.
That is correct.
I think that's a sign. We wanted an expression.
Right. And in fact, his lawyer at oral argument last week more than once said he would have given them something off the shelf. And we're not saying he won't sell them anything. But okay, so they came in, they wanted a cake. Now, the court has said in past cases that expressive conduct, even if not words, directly words, expressive conduct can count as speech in some circumstances if it is intended and would be understood as conveying a message. So in this case, the argument is, well, designing a cake is expressive conduct, right? So the justices had some trouble with that, and the liberal justices especially. And their point was, well, how can we possibly draw a line among the various people who might provide services for a wedding? So if we say the cake baker is engaged in expressive conduct protected by the First Amendment, well, what about the hairstylist? What about the makeup artist? What about the chef? What about the person who does the invitations? And what they were driving at was, it's just impossible to limit a holding on behalf of the cake baker, so we just can't go this way. They tried a number of things. Breyer said, well, maybe there's a distinction between artists and artisans, which has a kind of class quality, actually. You know, the artist, the great romantic hero, he gets protected, but if you're just a cake maker, you don't get protected. They talked about that. They talked about whether this speech could be properly attributed to the baker in any case. You know, maybe the speech, the whatever the design of the cake is, really should be attributed to the couple, because
once they purchase it, it's theirs.
Well, and in fact, everybody knows when you go to a, one of the lawyers made this point. Look, if you go to a bakery and you say, please bake a cake for my four-year-old Tommy, you know, and the baker says, happy birthday, Tommy, nobody really thinks the baker cares about Tommy at all, right? This is just what the customer wants. So they talked about that. But the main issue here, it seemed to me, for the justices was, if we say that this is protected speech, expressive conduct, and therefore the baker doesn't have to do it, well, wouldn't that effectively eviscerate the civil rights laws? Because once you do that, look, what if someone objects to an interracial wedding? What if somebody says, I just don't like black people, I'm not going to make a cake? How could you possibly avoid gutting the civil rights laws? And Tony Kennedy made this point. He said, look, frankly, he said, all these things are speech. So if we rule for Masterpiece Cake Shop, that would mean we'd have to rule in favor of all these other people, and that might result in a boycott of same-sex weddings, which would be an affront to the gay community. So that's kind of where we were on speech. Now, Tony Kennedy, Justice Kennedy, whom I mentioned a second ago, what was really interesting was, during this argument about compelled speech, at one point he interrupted and he said, look, that's all I need. I'm not so interested in this, right? Maybe my colleagues want to talk about this, but as far as I'm concerned, we can move on to other matters. And that really, I think, was sort of sent a shock, at least through listeners, through people in the court and through listeners who were paying attention, because that signaled he really wasn't interested in the speech issue. For him, the speech issue was easy, and probably the cake baker would lose the speech issue. He wanted to talk about something else, which will lead us to the next argument.
This is interesting. They took the case, which, in order for the court to take a case, how many members of the court have to vote in favor of taking the case?
Four. It's a rule of four. Only four.
So we don't even know if Kennedy voted to take this case.
We don't know. We don't know. But we do know, now again, a caveat, Mark, which is, you know, oral argument can be misleading.
Right.
You know, maybe Justice Kennedy just had a brainstorm that day and he wanted to talk about these things. I mean, maybe he'll change his mind when he goes back to his chambers. Probably, you know, just as an aside, most justices go in pretty much knowing how they're going to vote. Oral argument, it's rare that oral argument really is going to move the needle. Lawyers always say, it's possible to lose a case at oral argument. It's very hard to win a case at oral argument. You know, if you make a concession you shouldn't make or something like that. So we don't know what's going to happen. But based on what he was saying in this oral argument, it looks like for him the speech issue was easy and the bakery should lose. But there was another issue, which was potentially very difficult for the state, and that's the free exercise of religion issue. So maybe I should give you just a little background on the free exercise doctrine. So for purposes of the free exercise of the Constitution, we have a couple of cases that you need to know about. The first one is a case called Employment Division versus Smith from about 27 years ago, involving, you know that case, involving peyote and whether the state could criminalize the use of hallucinogenic drugs. And in that case, the Supreme Court, in an opinion written by the late Justice Antonin Scalia, said, if there is a neutral and generally applicable law, then there is no constitutional right to a religious exemption. In other words, you can't get out of a neutral law and a law that applies to everybody by saying, well, it infringes on my religion to comply with that law. That was Employment Division versus Smith, controversial case. A couple of years later, the court decided a different case called Church of Lukumi Babalu IA, which involved a Santeria church in Hialeah, Florida, that engaged in animal sacrifice. And the city of Hialeah banned animal sacrifice, but did it in a way that was pretty clear they were trying to get at the church. I mean, you know, you could kill a chicken for lots of reasons, just not for religious purposes. And in that case, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the church. And there was an opinion written by Justice Anthony Kennedy. Not all of it was joined by all the justices, but in that case, Justice Kennedy said, well, look, if a law is not neutral, if it is actually hostile, if it looks like it's motivated by hostility to religion, then you may have a right to a constitutional exemption. Hmm. Or if the law doesn't apply generally, if it doesn't apply generally, if it looks like it applies only to conduct that is motivated by religious belief, again, you may have a right to a constitutional exemption.
This is a big opening.
This is a big opening. I'm going to get to this case in specifically. So in a case like that, then there is potentially a constitutional claim. Now, in that case, the claimant would have to show, he'd have to meet, or the test that would apply is an old test called the test of Sherbert versus Verner, which is strict scrutiny. So in a case like that, if you're within the exception of Lukumi, the Church of Lukumi Babalu IA, then the claimant can show there's a substantial burden on his religious exercise, which is usually very easy. The court just defers. If you say it substantially burdens my exercise, they defer. Then the state has to show that the state has a compelling interest in applying this law to the claimant, and it's a narrowly tailored law. That is, there's no less restrictive means the state has to accomplish that compelling interest. Okay, so it's back to the old strict scrutiny, compelling interest test, which was the test, by the way, before Employment Division versus Smith in 1990. Okay, so you have, if it's a generally applicable statute that is neutral, no right to an exemption. If it's a statute that seems to be motivated by hostility to religion, or if it doesn't apply generally, but only with respect to religiously motivated conduct, then you go back to the compelling interest test. Okay, now what about here? So at one point, Justice Kennedy kind of interrupted, or maybe that's the wrong word, kind of leaned in and said, listen, I have a question about this. Doesn't the record in this case show that the commission had hostility to Jack Phillips' religion? And it was, why? Well, because in the record, one of the commissioners, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, one of them made a comment that freedom of religion used to justify discrimination is despicable. So Justice Kennedy said, doesn't that show they're being hostile to him? They're not being neutral to him. So the lawyer said, well, that's only one commissioner. And Justice Kennedy said, well, was it ever disavowed? And the lawyer said, no, but we disavow it now. So yeah, that was one commissioner. Then Justice Gorsuch picked up on this and he said, well, actually, there was another commissioner who made a comment like that too, wasn't there? And they, well, you know, whatever, you can't, you know, just because a couple of people say something doesn't mean that everyone is biased against the commissioner. Okay. Then it got worse for the state of Colorado because Justice Alito, so that's all about neutrality, right? Were they hostile to this man's religion? Then Justice Alito later interjected. That's the word I was looking for, interjected. Justice Alito interjected and he said, well, actually, is the commission applying this anti-discrimination law in a general way? Is it applying this in a general way to everybody? Because in the record, there is a case of a conservative Christian who wanted a cake shaped like a Bible with sentiments opposed to same-sex marriage on the cake. Why? I can't imagine why he wanted a cake like that. I don't understand what the ceremony would be, but he wanted a cake like that. He went to three bakers and they all said no. They said, we will not design a cake with anti-same-sex marriage sentiments on it. The commission didn't prosecute those bakers. Those bakers were left alone. So is this anti-discrimination law really general? Does it apply to everybody? Or is it being applied in a way that is specifically targeting conservative Christians? So Justice Alito raised that issue. At some point,
How did Colorado attorney handle that?
They tried to distinguish it. They said, look, you know, you can say no to someone like that because the person who doesn't like same-sex marriage is not in a protected class, so you don't have to do it for that person.
But isn't that person speaking as someone trying to exercise his freedom of religion?
Yeah, I think it was...
Which makes him a protected class. I don't know if officially, legally, that makes him a protected class, but...
Mark, I think they didn't have a very good answer to this question. And I think, to be fair to them, people didn't think the argument was going to go this way. This was all supposed to be about speech. This was not supposed to be... I mean, it was an issue.
I'm very glad that it's gone in this direction.
Well, let's see. It was...
Because what you said, Mark, you're going to lose. If it's just purely a free speech thing, I see defeat.
So this was very interesting that this came up. At one point, Justice Kennedy again kind of interjected, and he said, I'm quoting now, he said, tolerance is essential in a free society and must be mutual. And the state has been neither tolerant nor respectful of Mr. Phillips' religious belief.
Pretty strong.
It is strong. And as I say, this was really galvanizing and surprising because people did not think this is how it was going to go. Now, assuming that this is a Lukumi case, let's assume that we have Justice Kennedy and Justice Gorsuch. They convinced people this was not neutral. They were hostile. Or you have Justice Alito convince them, well, we don't know what they were trying to do, but the record shows they're applying this in a very discriminatory way. Then, as I said, you're back in the compelling interest test. So the government would have to show it has a compelling interest in the anti-discrimination law and applying it to Jack Phillips.
If there is a baker a half mile away, who would be happy to do anything that couple wanted? Does that kill the compelling interest argument?
Well, it's funny you mention that because Justice Kennedy brought this up too. He said, look, isn't it the case that accommodation is quite possible here? Because there are other good bakeries available.
Very, very conveniently located.
Very conveniently located, isn't that the case? So, but let's get to this compelling interest thing first, because I think that's interesting. So what is the compelling interest the state has here? It is in ending discrimination in public accommodations. And of course, the lawyers for Colorado and David Cole, the lawyer for the couple, he argued as well, they said, look, this is just like race. This is just like racial discrimination, and just as we would say that the state has a compelling interest in ending race discrimination that overcomes the exercise of religion, we should say it here too. And there's a case I'm sure listeners know about this case, the Bob Jones University case. a few years ago, more than a few years ago now, in the 1980s, where the court said, look, just because you have a bona fide or religious belief against interracial dating and marriage, that doesn't mean that you get to do that and keep your tax exemption, because the state has a compelling interest in ending race discrimination. So that's what the lawyer said here. Now, this is where it got quite interesting. It seems to me it got quite interesting, because there was pushback on this. The Solicitor General, Noel Francisco, who was arguing on behalf of the baker, and the baker's lawyer, both said race is different. Saying that one does not want to design a cake, or saying that one does not approve of same-sex marriage, is not the same thing as saying one does not approve of African Americans. Even more interestingly, Chief Justice Roberts at one point said, well, look, the race analogy is quite compelling. But after all, if you look at Obergefell, the same-sex marriage opinion, which was incidentally written by Anthony Kennedy, so I think this was clearly a play by Chief Justice Roberts for Justice Kennedy's vote. He was trying to look, Justice Kennedy, this is what you said in that case. The Obergefell court went out of its way to talk about the decent and honorable people who oppose same-sex marriage. Now, you know, inferentially, the court never said there are decent and honorable racists. They've never said anything like that. So, as Chief Justice Roberts said, it's not really right to lump the objectors to same-sex marriage and racists in the same category.
But that needs to be broadcast very widely, because it's the standard tactic in public life, right, on the left.
So look, this was the Chief Justice making this claim. Now, you know, as I've said now twice, and I'll say it again, this is oral argument, and you don't know if the court's going to do that, but it certainly is hanging out there as something for people to think about. Another difference that the lawyers for the cake baker said, well, look, racism is identity-based discrimination. You know, these people didn't want to serve black people because they were black people. But Jack Phillips doesn't say, I don't want to serve gay people. He says, I don't want to design a cake and participate by his lights. I understand some people would say, you sell a cake, you're not participating. But by his lights, he doesn't want to do that with regard to a same-sex marriage.
And there's a word that I haven't seen written in anywhere in discussions of this case, and that is the word is sacrament. For a Catholic, a devout Catholic baker, marriage is a sacrament. It's not just a civil, you know, secular ceremony, a couple of people agreeing on something. This is a sacrament that everyone there is implicated in. Everyone who attends a wedding is there to approve. You are asked to approve of this wedding. You're asked to affirm it. You're not neutral when you attend this wedding. And so I think if people who don't feel any religious faith at all, certainly, or any particular Catholic faith in his faith, or in some of the other conservative churches, they just don't understand.
Yeah.
What's the big deal? I mean, you're not really involved. I mean, it's just two people who want to pledge themselves. Why not let them do that? And I think that right there is simply a failure of understanding on a secular person's side to simply appreciate the meaning of what is happening here.
So that gets back to what Justice Kennedy was saying before about the state has not been tolerant or respectful of Mr. Phillips. Now I'm not sure Jack Phillips is Catholic. But even for Protestants, I'm not a theologian, but I think marriage is one of the sacraments. So it would still, your point would still hold there. Now, they said, look, he doesn't want to participate in this sacrament, if you will, right? That's why this is different from race. And then the lawyers for the state said, no, this is all about identity. They said, he is simply not doing this because these are two men, and right. Now, to be fair, the Supreme Court, in a case called CLS versus Martinez from a few years ago, said, in an opinion written by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, that when it comes to sexual orientation, the court will not distinguish between identity and conduct because they are simply too closely related. So the court has said on another occasion, it is not available to say, I don't oppose people, I oppose behavior, with respect to homosexuality. So when David Cole, the lawyer for the couple and when the lawyer for Colorado said this, they had some precedent on their side. Justice Kennedy interjected, look, your identity, I'm quoting now, your identity thing is just too facile. Because, he said, what this man could say is, it's not their identity that I object to, I just don't want to be part of this conduct. So once again, look, I mean, Justice Kennedy was saying, this is not what people expected Justice Kennedy was going to be saying in this case. You know, if actually he writes the opinion, or if the Chief Justice is able to put together a majority that includes Justice Kennedy on this, this could be a major free exercise case.
Indeed.
On the other hand, if they go back to chambers and Justice Kennedy thinks about it some more and thinks, no, I really don't want to go that way, I'm going with the speech issue, we're going to leave it there, then it would be a loss for Jack Phillips. So in the end, Mark, it's going to come down to what intuitions Justice Kennedy has about this case.
After talking with you, I'm optimistic. Now, I'm usually pessimistic.
That's usually the way to bet, Mark.
My temperament. I know. But this, for all of this to come up, and for I don't see him dropping it. I don't see how this can disappear from a final decision. This element here.
I forgot, we already talked about this, but of course, even if it is a compelling interest the state has, they have to show there's no less restrictive means of achieving that interest. And as Justice Kennedy said in the argument, there are other bakers nearby, so you don't have to make Jack Phillips do this.
Well, see, when you get down to sort of the practical, we get out of the legal issue and just look at the practical thing. Why do you have to target him? There are a lot of other bakers in town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a campaign, in my opinion. We are going to root out all the people who aren't on board. And if they show their resistance, we, with the eager cooperation of the state, are going to hammer them.
Right. So, Mark,
some of the things the state did, forcing him, the baker, and his family members, his employees, to undergo
training
sessions, and I think they have to issue quarterly reports.
Yep.
On the things they
for
they,
2 years.
The bureaucratic hammer comes down on them, and it must be infuriating to have to do this. There has never ever, from what I know, there's never ever been any complaint against him on discriminatory grounds before.
Right, but you see, here's where the race issue is so important, because we wouldn't say to a black couple, well, why don't you just go to another bakery? We would say, no, you have a right to go to any bakery you want to. So this is where we come back to Chief Justice Roberts saying, well, this isn't the same thing as racism. In Obergefell, the same-sex marriage case, we said these are decent and honorable people.
Right.
It is true that in Obergefell, having said that, the court said, and these decent and honorable people remain free to believe and teach what they want. It didn't say they can go into business and do whatever they want.
Right.
So there's a way to get around that.
Right.
So, but on your other point, by the way, Justice Sotomayor made this point, and she said, she kind of gave almost like a sort of a speech, actually, more than a question. It was, look, America's views on interracial marriage didn't change on their own. They changed because we enforced the public accommodations laws against businesses that did not want to serve interracial couples. And so, that's what we need to do here with regard to same-sex marriage. And towards the end of the argument, she said to the lawyer for Masterpiece Cake Shop, look, you know, if you don't like same-sex marriage, then don't go into another business.
Oh,
don't
fine.
Bake wedding cakes.
Easy for you to say. They're up on the court. One thing I would say is that I believe that in the changing attitudes toward race, that she may be giving a little bit too much credit to the legal enforcement of these issues and not enough credit to the broader cultural adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes things like news reports on TV showing the fire hoses
mm-hmm.
being turned on kids. I would say that assigning the law too much responsibility to move social change starts getting us into coercive territory. And I'd also remind her that again, the point you made, that he'd sell them a cake. He wasn't refusing them services 100%. Just this one pretty small area of services that he provided. That's all. That's all I'm saying that I won't do. And that's religious. And that is, I can go back to my church. I'm not making this up. And it's not new. Finally, I think Sotomayor is maybe being a little selective. I mean, when the court, selective about the historical impact of a judicial decision. Once we make this decision, things will change. Well, that didn't happen with Roe v. Wade, right? I heard that the justices thought that once they made the decision, it was going to go away. You know, that issue hasn't gone away. Mm-hmm. It's a solid controversy as much today as it was 30 years ago. So I'm not impressed by her interjection. When is this going to come down?
Well, so before the end of the term, the Supreme Court term ends at the end of June next year. So sometime before then, this probably is one of these cases which is going to go right till the end, I assume. There will be a lot of haggling among the justices. They'll write you know how it works is. So someone has been assigned the opinion. We don't know who that is, actually. That person will do a draft opinion. Then the other justices will have a chance to join or suggest changes or write their own opinions, either concurring or dissenting. I mean, I could see that happening here, too. I could see there being a decision, a 5-4 vote, but there being more than two opinions. There could be, you know, two opinions supporting the result and a couple of dissents. So you could have, maybe you have a fractured court, I don't know. But in the end, I'm fairly confident it's gonna turn on, the vote will turn on what Justice Kennedy thinks.
Okay. All right, thank you, Mark, for coming by. We may have you again in July when the term concludes.
Look forward to it, thank you, Mark.
Thank you.